Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. My name is John Manuel. I'm joined by J.J. Cooper. Thanks so much for joining us here in the DeMarini Demo House podcast nook. And when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game, introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free, so get the season started right and visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at DeMarini.com/Demo House. JJ, we do have a demo house here in the Raleigh-Durham Triangle area, so when my son gets a little older and when I want to spend more than $8 on a metal bat, I will be taking him to the DeMarini demo house. But right now, we'll just come to you from the demo house podcast. Nook, I want to remind you, you can always send us emails at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We don't have any questions for today's podcast. And in fact, it's actually going to be a themed podcast, but not one of our usual themes, JJ. It is a usual theme in the office. It's something we talk about a lot in the office, but not something that we necessarily talk about a lot on podcasts. And it's really just the basis of our most recent issue, which is really the fastball.
The issue that we put to bed today, it goes to the printer. It'll start shipping out to subscribers, I believe, on Monday.
Right. It's old media. That part of it's the old media.
And also it'll go up on our website as well.
Bringing the new media compliment in the online and then here on the podcast. But it's really all about the fastball. And there's so many ways that the fastball story could have gone. We wound up going in the direction of, well, here's a story about velocity and the part about the fastball that everyone locks into the most. But the other part of it, JJ, was stories about fastballs that don't focus on velocity. And that wound up being almost 100% a story about the cut fastball, kind of a kickboxing sport of the future, cut fastball, pitch of the 90s, or pitch of the aughts, I should say.
Now
pitch of the next decade. But I think it has kind of been the pitch of the last decade, the trendiest pitch.
This kind of all started, I guess, last two weekends ago. I was sitting at home.
That's far back.
And we emailed, and I sent out the email to you, and we're like, hey, you know, I was just thinking about this, and Aroldis Chapman, you know, last start, you know, there's reports he touched 102. Well,
right. For
a lefty starter, can you think of a left-hander who's thrown, you know, not thrown harder than that, because 102, you don't hear guys throwing harder than 102. Joel Zumaia actually, you know, on the best of days could actually run up a 103 according to PitchFX, but 102's right up there, but
Joel Zumaia, long toss joker.
Can you think of guys who thrown that hard as a lefty starter? Because when you think about the guys who throw the hardest of all time, most of them are right-handers.
And if you look at all-time power pitchers, you think the Nolan Ryans, the Walter Johnsons, Bob Fellers.
J.R. Richard's the guy I always throw in that because he really, you know.
J.R. Richard, when I was 8 years old, went to Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. We were in Atlanta for the Greek Orthodox Clergy Laity Conference. And went to a Braves game, and I was the next kid in line for J.R. Richard to sign autographs. And Bill Verdon said, or someone yelled to him, hey, J.R., you got to wrap it up, or blah, blah, blah. And I did not get his autograph, and that was the year he had a stroke. So that was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity that went by the boards for me.
But so we started
obviously a tragic story for J.R. Richard.
Much more tragic for him than for you.
Yes.
But so we started talking about that, and then that kind of led to, you know, hey, let's do an issue about, you know, a focus and issue on the fastball. And really with that, one of the things we wanted to do was development philosophies. I thought at one point it was going to be a two-part story, you know, development philosophies of do you let guys develop the cut fastball in the minors or not? And also with that, okay, two-seam versus four-seam, because there are a lot of different – on both sides, on both of those issues, there's some disagreement. When it comes to pitching, I think the safest thing you can say is whatever you want to say about pitching, there is disagreement.
That's correct.
About how you should approach it. Yeah. And there's not, you know, I mean, except for the fact that everyone believes you should throw strikes.
That's right. Everyone says the best pitch in baseball is strike one. Right. Otherwise, they don't really agree.
Otherwise, they don't agree on anything.
I think that's one thing that the more we've delved into this issue, the more we've found that to be true. That's definitely...
But with that, like with the cut fastball, you know, it does seem like it's not like that the cut fastball, I mean, is just popping up, because if you say who are the best guys ever at throwing the cut fastball, you know, the guys that come up are Mariano Rivera and Greg Maddux,
who both were doing it, you know, 15 years ago at least.
Right. I always think of Al Leiter, too, as a guy who
Charlie Liebrandt was doing it, not, you know, at that level, but Charlie Liebrandt was doing it in the 80s. So, I mean, this is not a pitch that, you know.
Not a new pitch, for
not
sure.
Not a new pitch, but it definitely is a pitch that if you ask people around the game, it's like, man, does it seem like there's a lot more emphasis on the cut fastball now? You get a lot of agreement. Yeah, it does seem like that it's a pitch that, you know, people are calling the pitch of the decade or whatever you want. It's like the split finger for the 80s,
right?
You know, is now the cut fastball for the generation, I guess would be safer to say.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, definitely for the generation. Because, yeah, it really was a generation ago, about 25 years ago, that basically the San Francisco Giants rode an entire pitching staff of, like, retreads
with
split fingers, like Mike Lacoste and, well, Rick Rusher wasn't necessarily a retread, but. There was one other guy I can always think of in my head with that team, and he just came in and he left. But it was a split finger fastball pitching staff, basically.
Right.
And Roger Craig was the guy kind
of
spread
the
mantra
of the
split. Absolutely.
And then all of a sudden people went, you know, we're seeing a lot of guys who's throwing this or, you know, blowing their elbows out.
Well, I think let's take one track of it. Let's take the hard thrower track first. And the story that we ended up doing,
right.
Tracy Ringlesby ended up doing on the fastball. And one thing that we've discovered here, JJ, is, you know, the fastball, to succeed in the major leagues in 2000, in this last decade, one thing that the data seems to support, well, let's just say right now, in 2009, 2010, you better have at least average fastball velocity, especially if you're a right-hander. Or you're really not going to have any chance of success. That's one thing that we basically discovered.
Not that you don't have no chance of success, but the guys, whenever they point to, the guys that everyone points to and says, see, you don't have to have an average fastball, are, for one, you can count them literally on one hand.
Right.
I mean, and I mean that by actually, I'm not using the figurative term poorly.
You didn't say figuratively, right.
We're talking, you can say Jamie Moyer. And then after that, you start running out of guys very quickly.
Well, like Barry Zito. And Barry Zito's a guy who had to improve his velocity by 2 miles an hour returning to his long toss program to get back to 86 miles an hour.
And the key thing about that, though, is even when you talk about those guys made it to the majors with an average fastball.
Correct. Boost. That's a great point.
Jamie Moyer, when he came up, which is many, many years ago,
had
an average fastball.
None of us worked at Baseball America in 1986 when he came up in the major leagues with the Orioles.
I had
was it Orioles or Rangers?
I thought it was Cubs. Well,
oh, no, you're right. It was Cubs.
I've got a lot of Jamie Moyer cards from back that year. You know, back then I was in high school.
Smart man, you saved them.
But so they're somewhere at the parents' house, I think. But probably worth about a quarter because everyone like me was collecting cards at the time.
That's right.
But it's something where those guys came up as average fastballs and then lost it. You know, LeVon Hernandez is another guy. But
yeah.
LeVon Hernandez, when he came up, had a plus fastball.
Absolutely.
Greg Maddux, everyone throws out Greg Maddux's example. He had at least an average fastball.
He was a second-round pick at high school. Nobody
90 to 93.
Exactly. He wasn't getting drafted because of his thumbing out
so
there.
So the point that this kind of, you know, that kind of does kind of come up is that if you look at the data, if you look at, you know, average velocity, fastball velocity for major league pitchers, and you say, look at the bottom 10 guys in that list. By the time you're in the NL or AL, by the time you're at number 10, you're at an average major league fastball.
Right.
And so what that's saying is that, you know, you'll hear a lot, oh, velocity's overrated, you can't scout by the radar gun, all these things. At the same – that there are points of truth to that. But at the same time, look, if you're 86, if you are in A-ball or double-A at 86 miles an hour, and it's like, and you are a master of pitching.
Right.
The chances are you probably aren't a major league pitcher.
If you make the major leagues, you're the exception rather than the rule, and you almost have to be exceptional at basically everything else.
And even if you are, because the reality is most of those guys, when I say, you know, and you have success in double A, most of those guys have success in A ball.
Right.
And then they hit double A, and especially they hit triple A, and they stop having as much success. I mean, you have to – there are some exceptions, especially from the left side.
Right.
But
from a right-hander with a below-average fastball. And that's – you know, we run across that. I'm doing a lot of draft calls right now. And I'll just throw out a specific example. I'm doing a lot of Southern Conference calls right now. And the Southern Conference has a potential first-rounder in Asher Wojciechowski at Citadel. What makes Ashton Wojciechowski a potential first rounder? Well, he's got a big body and a big fastball. He's 93 to 96 at his best. JJ, and I've had a couple coaches tell me he was sitting 95, not sitting, but still hitting 95 and 96 in the eighth and ninth innings of games. So I've got three reports of that, basically. So Ashton Wojciechowski's going to go off the board pretty good, and that's awesome. You know, great for Ashton Wojciechowski. There's another guy in the league at Furman named Ian Perry, who's a senior, and who's a classic command and control college right-hander. He's a senior. He's got three arm angles. He'll go sidearm, low three-quarters, and he'll go straight over the top. He's 86 to 88 with his fastball. He has a plethora of other pitches. He has like a 6-to-1 strikeout-to-walk ratio. He's got great numbers. The one loss isn't great, but the secondary numbers are all phenomenal, except for one, home runs allowed. And that's what happens. If he misses his spot with that 86-88 mile-an-hour fastball, even in the Southern Conference, he's getting pounded. Just pounded with home runs. Otherwise, he's an artist. But that guy, like every coach I've talked to and the one scout I've talked to who saw him are all like, I'd love to have this guy have some kind of career in the big leagues or in pro ball, but they all say like his only hope is as an extra guy in the bullpen, and only if as a reliever he goes from 86 to 88 to being like an 88 to 92 guy.
Right,
and that's, the likelihood of that is pretty low. And that's a guy who's a good, pretty good college pitcher, but he's really just not a prospect at that.
And that's the thing. I mean, we deal with people who get, you know, who understandably. Like when you're talking to people and they almost get frustrated by that because it's like, but this guy knows how to pitch.
Right.
And it's like the unfortunate thing is knowing how to pitch, while it's a very vital tool, but that, you know, as our story, this fastball story, we have explains, you can't teach velocity. You can teach everything else. It doesn't always click in, but if you have a guy who doesn't have a breaking ball, you can try to teach him a breaking ball. Now, not everyone spins it right, spins it well or not, but you can keep trying to teach him a breaking ball.
I definitely think the fastball and then the ability to spin a breaking ball, to me, those two things are just raw physical tools. I think you can coach up a breaking ball, but only to a certain point.
Right.
Like up to maybe average or fringe
average.
But
the thing about it is...
But if you have hand speed... then you will be able to have a breaking ball down.
And the thing about it is usually those two actually go together.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, that hand speed goes with the quick arm and having that ability to throw hard and to maintain the ability to throw hard. It's a Baseball America podcast. I'm John, and he's JJ. And one of the other things, I guess, that kind of leads me to the other stuff, the secondary stuff that really separates you, because most guys, JJ, aren't good enough with just fastball and breaking ball. As good as their fastball and breaking ball could be, we just don't see too many two-pitch pitchers in the big leagues who are starters anyway.
Right.
So developing that third pitch really, for some people, comes down to basically throwing a fastball with a different grip.
Right.
And whether is that fastball with a different grip going to be a changeup? Is it going to be a split-finger fastball? Or is it going to be a cut fastball? I think most pitching coaches, and most of the guys you talk to for this story, obviously they would rather you throw a changeup. But it seems like the cut fastball gets introduced to a lot of pitchers because they have an inability to locate their fastball. Is it glove side or
glove
to the
side.
Arm? Glove side.
Glove side. Because where you're
doing... So basically for a right-handed pitcher to the inside to a left-handed hitter.
Right. Really what the cut fastball is at its best is a pitch. If you struggle against when you don't have the platoon advantage.
Yeah, yeah.
What it does is it's another weapon that you have against a guy. So if you're a righty and you're facing a lefty, or especially if you're a lefty facing a righty.
Which, if you think about it, again, makes it similar to a changeup with a split, because those pitches are also weapons against platoon split guys.
Right, they're weapons against it. But now you'll have a guy like the guy I wrote about a little bit in the fastball story, Travis Wood.
Yeah.
Travis Wood is a fastball changeup guy.
Right.
But, okay, so he's fastball changeup. His breaking ball's never really been that much of a weapon.
Right.
The problem he had was he's got a great changeup. But if you think about it, his fastball was not a fastball that really, at least, or that he was comfortable. Like, it was never something that he could really own the inside corner of the plate against right-handers with his fastball.
Right.
Well, he's got this changeup, but what are you going to do with a changeup? You're not busting a guy inside of a changeup because
you
do
rarely,
that.
Very rarely, that's for sure.
You know, it's...
A lot of times you're just speeding up a guy's bat.
You're speeding up a guy's bat if you do that, you're running the severe risk of him destroying it.
Or if you miss and you're trying to come inside, you're going to miss over the plate and you're going to get pounded.
Right. So changeup is generally, in a way, it's something that you work away. Well, So what the cut fastball gave him was an ability to kind of reclaim that inside of the plate and give him, you know, hit or something where they could no longer sit over, you know, sit and basically
look outside.
Well, you know, and there's a lot of guys like that. Well, so the cut fastball, I mean, even if you have a changeup, the cut fastball, it at its best, I mean, if you want to say who's doing it at its best right now, Roy Halladay probably, take Mariano Rivera out of it. Because Mariano Rivera, a lot of what he does is his natural.
Yeah, sometimes he was never even really taught a cutter so much as
right,
he just throws a cutter.
Because at its best, the cut fastball is a grip, wrist position, finger pressure pitch. You sometimes, not often, but you occasionally have a guy who that's his natural delivery, gives him that cutting action. More often you have other guys who their natural delivery, their grip, their hand, all that gives them that sinking action. You'll see, you know, hear about guys.
Well,
Kyle
Gibson's a guy like
right.
that, no doubt.
Especially if you're a three quarters guy,
right?
You know, I mean, you don't really see very rarely, over the top. If a guy isn't a true over the top guy, he's generally a four seamer guy,
right?
Because it's just so hard to generate good sink from an over the top.
You can have downhill plane,
right.
But it's gonna be harder to generate that natural downward life.
Right. But Halladay, what it gives him, and this is what Maddux did at his best too, for the truly top of the line pitchers, what Halladay does is he can do whatever he's learned how to, as pitching coaches like to put it, manipulate the baseball.
Right.
So he can, because of that, he knows how with different grips, different little finger pressure and all, he can make a ball ride, he can make a ball cut. And he can do it to both sides of the plate.
It's the ultimate example of feel for pitching.
Right. And so what that allows you to do is you can really say that you have four or six fastballs because, okay, say you're throwing to the outside. Well, I've got a pitch that I can throw to the outside, and then just at the last minute, it leaves the strike zone, you know. Or I can throw one that is just out of the strike zone and at the last minute basically – cuts back, you know, that rides back in over the strike zone. Well, if you can
that's
do that.
Greg Maddux pitch
right.
20 years, it seems
right.
like.
And so, as a hitter, there is no good response to that. That's where you sometimes do have to just shake your head because you can either swing at the pitches that look like they're a strike that end up not being strikes,
right.
or you can let them go and then sit there and take a called strike three. Well, you know, and not many guys could do that. If they did, we'd all have, you know, we'd all be seeing ERAs of, you know, of one.
Yeah, it'd be 1968 all over again.
But that's the thing that's why, like, you know, talk to some pitching coaches because there is some debate. Like, some people think that cut fastball hurts arms, decreases velocity,
right.
And especially if you throw it incorrectly.
And that seems to be the big key that kind of started it for us is why the reason the cut fastball isn't universally taught. Everyone teaches a changeup.
Right. No one ever says, ooh, that changeup, you don't
right.
want to throw that.
Exactly. But, you know, but the cutter and the two-seamer, there's some people who are against both those pitches, basically. The cutter being that if you throw it improperly, there's too much emphasis on your wrist action, A, and B, the finish out front. You're cutting off your extension
right.
out front, your delivery.
And that's where the proponents say, well, you're talking about an improper cut fastball. But it is true that if you are conscious of throwing a cutter, a lot of times what will happen is a guy will not, like in his fastball, he gets a full finish. Like if you think about it, as we described this on the podcast, he releases the ball, and then his arm keeps going and essentially has a natural deceleration to essentially finish the pitch when we talk about finish. Well, if a cut fastball, guys will, instead of doing that, as they throw it, they'll essentially slam their arms. They'll stop their arm to try to give that little cut.
Get that recoil.
Right, or that recoil. That's bad for arms. That's like, and everyone kind of agrees, yep, that's not something that you want to do. Well, that's the thing, you get the disagreement, because some people say, well, it's so much, I see so much of that's why I don't want to see the cutter thrown.
And that's where you get the stories about, whether it's big leaguers or prospects, JJ, who get cutter happy, and we've had that, we had rumors about that maybe happening with Chris Tillman this year. Then, of course, Chris Tillman goes out and does a no-hitter. We have the talk about that with Chad Billings. He's a big leaguer who, if you look at the Fangraphs information, you look at the pitch effects data, he's thrown more and more cutters and fewer fastballs over the years. Andy Pettit was a guy who's come out and said, yeah, I got cutter happy for years, and he dropped his velocity dipped, and, So it sounds like there is a theory out there that people can get cutter happy. They're just throwing it wrong, but they can't throw too many? Or is it just really that you're throwing it wrong?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. Some people say yes because the way that you – I mean, this really kind of leads into the two-seam, four-seam. I would say I haven't – in talking to people about the two-seamer versus four-seamer, I didn't find anyone who I talked to for this who said, no, two-seamer's bad.
Right.
But what I did
four-seam's better.
But what I did hear was a lot of people who said two-seamer later.
Hmm.
Like, okay, we're going to teach you a four-seamer. You're going to throw a four-seamer. And then later on, we'll let you throw a two-seamer. And the reason for that is that the four-seamer is believed to be the pitch that gives you velocity.
Right.
It builds arm
strength. And if you command the four-seam fastball, if you don't really, it's a building block for any kind of pitching is commanding the fastball.
Well,
and if you don't command the four-seamer, you really, it's hard to move on to anything else. It's almost a non-starter. And you've actually gotten to see that in person this year with the Royals as an organization, not the only one, but it's one that you do their top 30. They definitely like their younger guys to focus on the four-seam fastball and having a guy like Tim Melville who has had a sinker in the past, has worked a lot with a two-seam fastball, and having to really, for him, it's been concentrating on the four-seamer, although you saw him pitching well.
Right. Well, one of the things that, but he's the kind of guy that this is what pitching coaches are talking about.
Right.
Is that he is a guy who does not command his stuff yet. You know, a lot of times out, you know, he has trouble.
It's a live arm, certainly.
Right. There's trouble repeating the delivery. There's a lot of, you know, that's the kind of guys that where they're talking about. It's like, okay, let's see you command the four-seamer first. Because for one thing, you know, if you get your delivery down, then command for everything becomes a whole lot easier. I mean,
sure.
When we talk about command, pitching coaches almost universally say, I mean, really what we're talking about, if you don't repeat your delivery,
right,
then it's going to be really hard. You know, if you, and what we mean by repeat the delivery, if you don't basically, okay, let's take what you threw pitch one, pitch two, and pitch three, and now if we could superimpose them on each other, do they look the same?
Right. And that's how you get, I mean, to me, The secret to repeating your delivery is athletic ability, and that's not really a secret. But that's how you can get a guy like Ubaldo Jimenez, who might have the best stuff of any big league starter right now, and he has that ridiculous stab in the back of his arm swing, and his arm action in the back is,
which is something that's
completely atypical, completely not recommended arm action, and yet he's so athletic, and I think his arm is so quick, that he's able to do that and repeat it and generate premium stuff. Now, command is still an issue for him because of that arm stab. Even in his no-hitter, he walked six, right?
Right.
But he's not A.J. Burnett. I mean, he's not that kind of bad mechanic. He repeats that better than I think he has any business doing. I think it's because of his outrageous athletic ability.
Well, and this is one of the things that pitching coaches and scouts and player development people I was talking to for these stories were talking about. One of the things they said is that they see a lot of guys now, you can see them in high school, and it's like, well, you know, I throw my four-seamer, I throw my two-seamer, I cut the ball, I got a changeup, I got a curveball, and I got a slider. And, again, there aren't a whole lot of agreement in baseball and much of anything. And one thing there's agreement generally on is, or there's a lot of people who say, hey, don't say a blanket statement on anything. But
that's right.
99.9% of the time on that, they're like, you know what? No, okay, let's take the cutter away. Let's take the two-seamer away. Let's take the slider away, or let's take the curveball away. And now you're a fastball, curveball or slider, changeup pitcher, and let's get those three down. Down the road,
right.
That's where, like, double A, if you really think about it, when you talk about the jump to double A and all, one of the things it is it seems like double A is a lot of times, it's almost like you get your college, you know, you get your high school or college diploma, whichever way you want to say
right.
it, in A-ball.
Yeah.
Well, let's say you're high school. You're a high school diploma. You get that for getting out of A-ball. And then you get to double A, and it's like, okay, now we're going to give you the more advanced courses.
That's it. That is how
it's
looked at.
Okay, now, to get to double A, generally what you're saying is, okay, now we've hopefully gotten you to where you're commanding your fastball, or at least controlling it, and you're showing some ability to command it.
Right.
Not every time out, because if you could command your fastball every time out, generally you're pitching in the big leagues.
That's all just about.
If you have plus stuff and you command your fastball every
time
out.
See, Leak, comma, Mike.
Yeah.
That's how you jump over those levels.
Right. You know, and that's what essentially, I mean, hey, the Reds are looking smart right now for sending him straight to the big leagues.
He pitched great in his second start.
You know,
third, fourth start.
Fourth start. I mean, but he's been their most consistent starter. And so, you know, so really with that, what you're looking at is that, okay, so we're going to, you know, you get to that level, you can command your fastball some. You can throw your breaking ball generally for some form of, you know, you can, you don't, it's not just a waste pitch. But, so, yeah, you do that, and then now we'll add in the cutter. Now we'll add in, you know, the other things. So then you can.
And that's the problem we have draft-wise, JJ, a lot of times, and when we're talking to scouts or college coaches, and they're, and like you said, there are a lot of pitchers in college or in high school where scouts will talk about, you know, yeah, that guy's kind of got a trick pitch. Chris Tillman was a guy who was like that. He had a split finger in high school. He doesn't have a split finger anymore. You run into that with a lot more high school pitchers, it seems like, than you used to. I mean, I've been doing draft coverage off and on for 6 years, like bearing down on a region, and maybe 7 years, I guess it is now. And it's remarkable to hear about, like you said, well, college pitchers especially who throw too many pitches.
And the funny thing is, the scouts,
and they don't command the fastball.
But and the funny thing about that is kids are doing that obviously partly because they think it'll show that they're a better pitcher, you know, and it may give them even some more results. But the reality of it is that if you talk to scouts, one of the things that they say a lot of is you know, no, I don't want to see you throwing a cutter
right.
in college unless you are like Mike Leake. Those guys like that are exceptions. Like
right.
Okay, this guy is an advanced pitcher, but especially a high school kid.
Mike Minor's a guy who like they like to see. But even Mike Minor threw one too many pitches in his junior year. That's why his stock went down. Generally, I mean the Braves drafted him in the seventh overall. They still liked him, but he generally more pitches was worse for Mike Minor than better.
Right, and the thing about it is like no, if you ask a scout, what do you want to see? Well, I want to see that you can command the fastball, and you've got, I mean, the reality is that you've got some velocity on
right.
it. It's got some life on it.
They're looking for arm strength
and
mechanics that won't blow up.
And ideally, can you spin it?
I think that's it. That is what they're looking for.
If you can do those three things.
And one of the worst profiles is the right-hand pitcher who's a fastball changeup right-hander. It's very hard. If you don't have that innate ability to spin a breaking ball, that might be a whole other podcast or a whole other story, but can you teach someone to throw a breaking ball? And I've had a lot of pitching coaches who say no, but you definitely have. But you can teach these secondary pitches.
The changeup is one that's like.
Oh, that's yeah.
You
that
gotta
has
find
to be
your
taught,
grip.
I think.
You know, and the thing about it is most you're not expected to even really like if you've got a high school kid who goes to pro ball, they're not expected to throw a changeup.
You're not expected
to have any. Like you talk to pitching coaches and like no, I understand that when you're in high school. You shouldn't be throwing a whole lot of changeups. The reason you got drafted in the top five rounds is because you have arm speed.
Yeah, but you know, but if you have a feel, they're not going to knock you for it. I think they actually prefer to see the guys who already do have some idea of how to throw a changeup. They want to see feel. If you're talking about guys who are going to get six-figure bonuses, you want to just see someone who's not just an arm strength guy,
right.
And knows how to pitch. Knows how the pitching right. aspect there is. I already understand at this early age, I can blow by guys. They don't want you to throw a changeup at a 7, 8, 9 hole hitter in high school.
Well,
but they do want to see that you can upset a hitter's timing when you're facing other good hitters.
I'm talking about this more from the player development side.
I think they do want to see a changeup.
People on this the player development side said, look, if I have a rookie ball guy who doesn't know, have any clue how to throw a changeup, doesn't bother me because
sure.
we can teach that.
Sure. But they don't. I don't think they're going to look askance at someone who does come in with a changeup.
I'm not saying they're going to dock you for it or anything.
Right.
But I'm saying, but that doesn't concern them.
I like doc. I like a good use of doc as a verb.
They're not concerned about that the same way that if you don't show any ability to spin a breaking ball, that's kind of a little red flag goes up because
no doubt that's much worse.
Like you know what? I mean, coming out of high school, you should be throwing. Everyone they expect that you should show some ability to spin it.
Well, especially with the kids facing nothing but metal bats, that's the other thing. That's I think the reason that you have more high school pitchers, more amateurs, who have maybe more pitches in their repertoire than you used to. A, there's an explosion of private lessons, but B,
and summer showcases.
Right,
which,
you got to miss bats. I mean, the showcase thing almost is better for you to have fewer pitches because you can miss wood bats at that level more. You're gonna miss metal bats, but because you don't have to miss bats as much.
Right,
you're looking.
Guys,
you're gonna get. But the other aspect that never gets thought of. This is a whole other show. At the college level, people criticize college coaches and college pitching coaches and college pitchers for throwing too many breaking balls. Is defense at the college level is terrible. You know, there's no need to have advanced metrics to study college defense. When you see Aaron Fitwright that East Carolina has a 950 fielding percentage, you know they suck at defense. You don't need to know what their user rating is. You know they suck defensively by that 950. So it's a very simple defensive efficiency
there.
So you need to miss bats when you're pitching at East Carolina.
And the reality of it is that, look, I mean, when it comes to shortstops, the number of college shortstops who are major league, you know, future major league shortstops is a very small number because, again, those are the guys who don't get to college a lot of the times.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we could go on. We need to not go on. We still have draft and other things, other calls to make. But I do think we'll talk more pitching. If you want to talk more pitching, send us those questions. You can, or you can also, of course, hit up JJ on Twitter, twitter.com/JJCoop36. I'm at John Manuel BA or at Baseball America for our Twitter feeds, or you can send this into us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. So for JJ Cooper, I'm John Manuel, reminding you that when it comes to buying a baseball bat, DeMarini just changed the game. Introducing Demo House, where you can step into the cage and hit the latest from DeMarini before you buy, because there's no substitute for hitting a real baseball or talking to people who know both bats and batting. Your demo time in the cage is free, so get the season started right and visit your nearest Demo House today. Locations and full details can be found at DeMarini.com/Demo House. We'll see you next time on the Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.